ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily as we head into round six of the AFL Premiership season, and what a way to kick it off. The Magpies by 5 points as Nick Dacos puts his hero cape on in the last quarter to lead the Magpies to victory, coming from 18 points behind. Same old story for the Blues, and that doesn't say anything about the fact that the youngest player on the ground had a chance to tie the game after the bell. All of that to get into, plus, of course, your key question from every game in round six, plus our Superdogs at the end. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's here. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. 78,000 fans in attendance watching Carlton and Collingwood, the oldest rivalry in the game. It was outstanding to be here and take it all in.
And Brett Dilidio, the All-Australian best and fairest winner, number one pick. Richmond champion, GWS footballer, one of the best analysts in the game.
I think we can shorten that.
Hello, Lids.
I really think we can probably shorten that. People can probably tune out by the time you boys keep going with it. But, yes, hello, gents. It's always good to be here. What a game.
Longest drive winner.
Longest drive.
Used to be star. Player agent to the Stars as well, yes. But that's been lopped off.
Yep. No, there's only one thing that I'll do, but I'll talk about that off air. I would like you to say it. And that's all we need to worry about.
Okay. Stand by for that in weeks to come.
Potentially. tonight's game that we just watched, it was woeful, wasn't it, for three quarters. And then we got a barnstorming finish from the Pies. And then we heard from Josh Dacos, and he said, well, that's what we want to be known. That's how we played in the last quarter is how we want to play. How they bottle that, I got no idea. But they need to come out from ball dot and show us that that's how they can play. The pressure was great. They attacked the goal square. They kicked goals. Nick Dacos was also on their team. That helps. Pretty handy player. But, yeah, it was Carlton's to draw, I suppose, wasn't it? I think they should have probably won tonight. I feel like they left one on the table, didn't put them away in the third quarter and left it out there.
Three big things out of the night. We're going to start with the way that it ended. So Taylor Byrne, who is a fourth gamer, picked up by the Blues in last year's national draft. He's the youngest player on the ground at 18 years of age. He did his bit well, which was essentially he sold something to the umpire and the umpire bought it,
yep.
Which was exactly what he wanted. Josh Dacos, involved in the incident at the end, dropped the shoulder into the back of Taylor Byrne. Byrne hit the deck. Umpire blows his whistle. There was like less than 20 seconds remaining in the game. It was meant to be a boundary throw-in. Instead, the ball goes to Byrne, and the young man gets the opportunity to go back and hit the drop punt to essentially tie the game. Collingwood lead by six at this stage. Comes in, kicks it. Out to the left.
To the left.
And I'm behind. And ultimately, that is how it ended. So a 5-point victory for the Magpies. Ben Cameron, you spoke to Josh Dacos in the rooms post-game and you asked him about that particular incident. What do you have to say?
Yeah, it was, mate, just reliving it now. I don't even want to look at the vision. I feel a bit sick talking about it just because, you know, we work so hard as a team and just for something like that to happen. I just remember, you know, he gave me one towards the sternum, turned around and I bumped him back and, he went down. So, you know, silly for me. You know, you just got to keep your cool in that instance. You know, players are going to want to draw free kicks out of you. But, you know, I don't know if much was in it. But at the end of the day, it's a free kick maybe nowadays, in football nowadays. But relieved he missed and, you know, we get the 4 points.
What were you thinking as he went back and took the shot?
Oh, just so much, you know, disappointment in myself. You know, he could hit me as hard as he wants. You know, I've just got to, you know, not retaliate there. It's 20 seconds left or whatever it was. So, watching the free kick get awarded and then him lining up, you know, I was sick in my stomach.
So Josh Dacos there on ABC Sport following the result. And in the end, he would have been pretty happy to get out of a little bit of trouble. Yeah. Team wins, celebrate his brother's milestone. And, gee, imagine...
He's lucky.
Had he put that ball through.
Yeah, well, we're talking about a young fella who missed the goal and he's not going to sleep tonight. And then you've got, if it goes through, he's happy as. And Josh Dacos is not living that down. And if I was Nick, I'd be letting him know about it as well. But, yeah, it was just a dumb mistake from Josh and he admitted that.
Oh, I did think when I was questioning him, I thought he might have referenced that, oh, no, I've cost my brother a win in his 100th game, but he didn't go for that, Josh. Nick Dacos, the second of our three big things, 39 disposals, 16 contested possessions, 8 clearances, 8 inside 50s, and 9 score involvements for him in his 100th game.
Yep.
Just quickly, this match for Nick before we move on to the set of 100 lids.
This match, I thought he was pretty well held, to be honest, over the first three quarters. Like he had 26 touches to three-quarter time, which is, mate, I'll be pretty happy with that most games. But I didn't feel like he had the damage. But then stepped to the last quarter and away he went. Four clearances, five score involvements, a goal himself. And just and nine of those, you know, 13 possessions were contested. So he was just, as you said, putting the hero cape on, and away he went. Big contested mark, then another contested win, 1v2, pops it over to Jamie Elliott. It was, yeah, that him as a player, like, and I said at the start of the broadcast that I enjoy coming to watch him play because he's just, you know, you buy tickets purely just to watch him play.
So is it the best set of 100 games that we've seen in the AFL era?
Well, I think he's the best second-year player we've ever seen. I think he's the best third-year player we've ever seen. And I think he's the best fourth-year player we've ever seen. So I think if you're doing that, it's all of a sudden... Yeah, I think
it's
it is.
The best 100.
It's the best 100. I mean, you look through everything he's done. Coach's Award winner, won the MVP. He's averaging 33 Brownlow votes a year last 3 years. Three-time All-Australian. Premiership player. And he was the best player, I think, in the Premiership team. I think we can all admit that in what was his second season in the game. So... I think it is, and I know a lot of people will go, oh, but what about, you know, John Coleman or Peter Hudson or whatever it turns out to be? I think for most of us,
yep.
If we look at the last, you know, 40 years as a sample size, what a lot of us...
Since podcasts have been around.
It's the best set that I've at least seen with, I think, with my two eyes.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I did crunch some numbers. So since his debut, which was round one of 2022, he's had more disposals than any other player. So Lachie Neale, second behind him, are the second most Brownlow votes behind Paddy Cripps. So... six less than Cripps. He could easily have one or two of those. Yep. Charlie's hanging around his neck. And the second most coaches' votes behind Lachie Neale. Mm. So he's been right at the top of...
That's some, consistency, isn't it? Yeah, like, that's just categories. A model of consistency.
And I think your first 100 is incredible. You're not meant to be that good that early.
No. And I think I mentioned as part of the pregame on the coverage last night on the ABC that essentially, look at the way we talk about the guys in his draft class. We talk about them like they're coming into their prime, like Sam Darcy and Nasai Wanganeen-Miller. They're sort of trending up into the right, but they're not yet there in their prime. Nick, we've been talking about as the best player in the game, and if not the best, in the conversation in the top three for... 3 or 4 years.
So before we move on from Nick Daicos, can we, if he continues on this trajectory, where he's going,
yep.
Is he the greatest of all time by the time he finishes?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
I'll look at Gary Ablett Jr. as my favourite all time, because I didn't see a lot of Lee Matthews play. But I feel like if he can, like Gaz's first 100 were relatively quiet, forward pocket, running around, kicked some grouse goals. But I feel like this kid is just... Well, I'll tell you what, if he continues to play at this high level, goodness me.
Third of our big three things, it's happened again for Carlton. It's the eighth time now. Michael Voss celebrated a milestone at the MCG tonight as his 100th game as coach, and it's the eighth time that his side's given up a three-quarter time lead. That's incredible that happens as regularly as it does, and it's a huge statistical anomaly. And even from halftime, so it's the 14th time in 100 games that his side's led at halftime and lost.
I reckon you could go even closer than that, because I feel like the last two and a bit years has been when they've done all these close losses.
Yeah. So in that, it's been a dozen, so 12 of the 14 have been in the last since the start of 2024.
Yeah, there you go.
Crazy. I mean, I know he took them to a prelim final and that they had sort of great heights together and probably given Carlton fans, you know, in the last 20 years their best memories in what Voss has been able to do with this team. But it is inescapable. He's coaching for his job right now, and whatever that looks like, you would think, you know, wins and losses certainly is a starting point. They believe that the top brass at Carlton are a wild card type team, top 10 team. That one thing he can't afford is to be 1-5, and what he certainly can't afford is to be losing the same way repeatedly.
Yep.
And that's what we've seen.
Concerning.
I've been down on the boundary for a lot of those games, and I often, naturally, you get drawn to looking at Michael Voss, and I would say that often he's, I don't know if it's calm, I don't know if it's bereft, but he's sort of almost unemotional regularly. Today, that wasn't the case. He was up, he could feel... a lot of the tension, the stress, whatever it is, in Michael Voss down the stretch as Collingwood game. Yeah, but even in the previous ones, like it hasn't been.
Yeah,
and
been
I've
pretty
expected
stoic,
it.
Hasn't
it? Yeah, it felt like today that was a bit different.
Yep.
One other footnote to take out of the game, and it's not a happy one, but Elijah Hollands played 72 minutes and had one disposal. I'm pretty certain he was in the coaches' votes the week before. And the reason why we emphasise this is not to point out a guy that's had a lean night, but it was so out of character for how he'd been going. And it's so rare that, I mean, we've all followed footy for a long period of time, that you see a guy trending a certain way and then just have a game where he's off the map and could not get anywhere near it and basically ran around for, you know, large percentage. I think he played 60% of game time and he had one disposal for the entire night.
So naturally, when you're on the boundary, and this was pointed out on the broadcast, I was keeping an eye on Elijah. And I think what's important at this stage is to say that we don't know what's happened. So I think it's best that we wait and see what comes out of tonight. And I think we all hope that Elijah's okay.
Here is Michael Voss speaking about it post-game.
He's pretty shattered with his game, to be honest with you. So I spoke to him after the game, and he was really disappointed with how he started the game. Really upset. Sort of feels like he's let me down. So I had a good chat with him. So he was pretty emotional after the game. Didn't play a great game, and he struggled to get his way into it. And you know, feels obviously clearly really disappointed with his performance, and obviously with the importance of the night. He sort of feels like he's let people down, but we've just got to keep supporting people through those situations.
100% same sentiment, Ben. I mentioned on the broadcast last night that, you know, we look at players sometimes almost like they're in a computer game, like we come along and we talk about the footy, but they're human beings and we know what it's like. You know, when we go to work, for example, and if you have something going on in your personal life or whatever it turns out to be, that can impact your performance in the workplace. So whatever happened with Elijah Hollins tonight, I agree. I hope he's okay.
And I would go a step further and just implore any of our listeners of ABC AFL Daily to just be kind in the comments. Like, there's a lot of stuff on social media already that I don't think really serves anybody. So think twice before you maybe post.
Key question from the remainder of the games in round six. Ooh, so Geelong and the Western Bulldogs. It is a, what do we call it, a dual site doubleheader? It's not a doubleheader at the same venue, but we've got two Friday night games, which we'll touch on in just a moment. First, though, Geelong and the Western Bulldogs. Has the game had a more versatile player than Mark Blitzarfs?
I don't think so. And I was listening to, I think it was Tom Stewart talking about, you know, Chris Scott, and how he uses Mark Blitzarfs in any game. He's like, oh, Pendlebury's out of control. Let's put him onto him.
Yeah.
Now, actually, Dan McStay's gone out of control. He's kicking goals. I'll put him to full back. So that ability to just go midfield, back, go to the wing, go into the ruck.
Yeah.
Or, no, actually, we need someone to spark us up forward. Just go there and clunk one and then knock one through. I'll tell you what, I remember when he first got drafted as a skinny steeplechaser, and you're just like, there's not a chance in hell this guy's going to make it. But two-time All-Australian, two-time best and fairest. I think he's two-time All-Australian.
Yep.
But his ability to run but be strong over the footy and just change it. They don't always dominate a game, but geez, he's consistent.
Let me correct that.
Yeah, it's
once an All-Australian, dual best and fairest.
Yes. In a premiership year, he was All-Australian. So 2022 was the All-Australian.
So there are a few names that I thought of.
Can I give you one? Because you've probably got more than me. First name I think of is Adam Good.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. Fools never differ or... Yeah. Great minds think alike, either one.
But a guy that could
He was versatile. Matty Pavlich was pretty versatile.
So what, Pav won all Australians, didn't he? In
all three lines, essentially.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably recency biased, but Adam Goodge was a pretty good player when he dual Brownlow medalist.
But he's a bit different, isn't he, in the way his size and how he moves around and everything else. Where I feel like...
Well, Goodsey never played at full back, though, I don't reckon.
No.
And so not as versatile then.
And if I think of Adam Goods, I'm thinking of this, like, you know, modern prototype midfielder sort of through the middle of the ground or whatever and, you know, starring. And even with Pav, I sort of, in retrospect, you probably think, you know, big centre-half forward comes out sort of in the same era of, you know, Revolt and Treadray and all those guys.
We're not talking about great players. We're talking about versatility. So
correct.
Mark Blitzarfs is...
Yep. We're talking about, you know, a guy that's playing fullback, then goes in the ruck, then's on the wing.
Yeah, all in one game, not in one season, all in one game.
Correct.
And he did say that, I think he said to us last year that on AFL Saturday, that he's put it on the coaches to tell him before the main training session where he'll mainly be playing so that he can train in that position. Also, Corbin, we promised in our season previews about, I just put everyone on notice. I feel like there's a few too many unicorns getting around in the competition. I did notice that Mark Blitzarfs.
Uh-oh.
Was listed as a unicorn by a certain broadcaster last week on a game you were doing, I think, on pay TV. There have been three different broadcasters who I've had listeners of this podcast
Ooh,
wow.
send through to me
yes.
who have called someone a unicorn. Three different players. So a tease for Monday night. I'll reveal that audio.
Yep.
And we'll keep track of our unicorn list. And I will name, not necessarily shame, but name and shame the broadcasters that have gone with their unicorns.
So the whole idea is a unicorn, you know, never before seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got three broadcasters naming three separate players.
Yep.
Wembanyama is a unicorn. Yep. You're never going to see another Victor Wembanyama in the NBA.
The original was Kristaps Porzingis. He was the guy that they called the unicorn initially. And then it's just now it's sort of caught on like wildfire.
There's lots of unicorns everywhere.
Yeah,
it's scattered
it's
around.
A bit like how loosely superstar gets thrown around.
Yeah. Hey, that's another conversation for another time. Dangerfield's back for the Cats. And as we mentioned earlier, I don't know if we did mention earlier. I'm mentioning it now if we haven't. English isn't playing, but the other three are. So Liberatore's back. Richards is named and Norton's named. So that's the team Handy news out of that.
Yep.
Sydney and GWS. So this is the Battle of the Bridge.
It is.
The Sydney Derby, which runs really head-to-head with the game between the Cats and the Dogs. So there's a half an hour delay between the two of them. The Swans and the Giants are slightly later start. But the question is, out of this game, does the Sydney Derby deserve standalone billing?
100%. It's still one of the funnest games and most intense games that I've played in. And I didn't realise this until I played in my first one when Leon went absolutely bananas in the team meeting just after the captain's run. Like, this is, we've still got a whole night to sleep and be ready for it. And he revved us up and I was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to sleep here. Absolutely. I think if we're going to try and appeal to the northern markets, then this should be standalone and we should be trying to build it up as much as we can. Quick little side note, interesting that, and shout out to Cal Ward, they've changed the medal to the Kirk Ward medal now, which is fantastic for recognition for Cal.
Oh, I did like your explanation on the Tuesday podcast with Bob Murphy, though, Corbin, that the need for two games on a Friday night to avoid five-day turnarounds to get teams on Thursday night so we don't have to watch the bottom sides battle it out on a Thursday night.
You kind of, I feel like I've been telling this story over and over again, and very few people listening, so I'm glad that you did, Ben, that you were listening to that.
I learned something.
But it is is the reason why we're doing it, because everyone complained that the Thursday night games were junk. We got too much of Carlton, North.
Oh, what did we get today?
Whatever it turns out to be. So essentially what they need to do, because every team's only allowed to play 2 5-day breaks. Yeah. If you went from Saturday to Thursday, you're off a 5-day break. So what we need to do is we need to get more teams playing on Friday and Thursday, because it gives us 6 teams in a rotation for the following Thursday, not off short rest, so not burning one of our 2 5-day breaks. And so essentially that's why you'll see more teams playing on a Friday night, because it'll essentially give them more fixture flexibility for the following week. The other thing that I want to keep an eye on too is I would love to know how many times on free-to-air nationally they would broadcast a game that doesn't involve a Victorian team. There's always some kind of Victorian team worked in. So I think that's a huge reason that, you know, a large portion of the population that loves and follows Australian rules football is based in Victoria.
Yes.
So if it's not your team, it's the team that one of your mates barracks for, someone you go to school with or whatever, so there's more of a vested interest. But very rarely, almost never, I think that Channel 7 would go with, you know, Fremantle versus another out-of-market team, for example. It would be, you know, Fremantle versus Collingwood, or it would be Carlton or one of the teams in Victoria, I think, represented in that game. So I think that's a big part of it. And the other thing, this has a chance to be bigger ratings for Channel 7, because they will take the Fox Footy game, the Sydney Derby, and put it on free-to-air in Sydney. So what it basically means is you're more likely to get people watching on free-to-air TV in Sydney, the Swans and the Giants game, than you would get watching the Cats and the Dogs. But the Cats and the Dogs game goes on free-to-air into Victoria and South Australia and WA. So you get all those people watching a good game of footy, and you get people in New South Wales watching the Derby in a way that they wouldn't previously, and they all add to free-to-air fixtures, free-to-air numbers, eyeballs. Ultimately watching the game. So it's more people watching Aussie Rules footy.
A lot of things out of that one question.
Yeah. That is fascinating, though. So almost sort of just manipulating things there. The Gold Coast Suns up against Essendon. Who has the brighter future in the ruck?
Ooh.
Is it Mac Andrew or 2 Metre Peter?
Wow. Mac Andrew, I think, in terms of pure athleticism. But I really enjoyed the way Pete started the game last week against Max Gorn. I think it gives him a harder edge in and around the footy, and it helps him to crash a few more packs and be the big bloke versus sometimes you can get starved of opportunity to do that, you know, until later in the second quarter or third quarter before you actually, you know, crash your pack or whatever it may be. So, yeah, I like Pete in the ruck, but I think if I'm picking someone as a second ruck, it's Mac Andrew, given how high he can jump.
Yeah, I love both of them in the ruck. I mean, they look great in those positions, don't they? I'm with you. I think it brings out the best in Peter Wright. And for Mac Andrew, I don't know. It's sometimes at fullback, sometimes he can feels like he gets a little bit lost down there at different times.
He can float, yeah, 100%.
Whereas he's in the ruck, and the same thing as you said, what you get out of Peter Wright is that that competitiveness. So hopefully more of that for both guys. But I think in the short term it'll be Peter Wright. Peter Wright's got more of a future in the ruck.
I think Mac will end up going back and playing back predominantly.
Yeah, and he's. Yeah. Yeah, Jared Witz has still got to play.
Yep.
He can't play another position, for example.
Yep.
Whereas who's coming back for the Bombers until Nick Bryan's really up and ready to go? And even then you think, well, we'd be better off just having Peter Wright and keep the forward mix the way it is. We'll see. So Gold Coast about a 7-goal favourite against the Bombers back on the Glitter Strip, despite the fact Essendon are the team coming off a win and the Gold Coast coming off a couple of L's. Hawthorn, Port Adelaide, Ben, Saturday twilight, you'll be doing this game at Docklands.
I will. Who is more improved than Jack Ginnivan in the last 3 years?
Who is more improved?
Yep. So I've got a name that comes to mind for me.
I'm going to say, I haven't done the research on it for the last three years, and I can't think back that far. And I get very stuck in what's going on the last couple of weeks versus going back 3 years.
Have you got one, Corp?
I will.
I've got one right now.
Go on.
Ben Long. Okay. I think Ben Long's just about the most improved player in the competition. So, what was it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years at St Kilda. Year 8 at Gold Coast, he plays 15 games. Then in the next season, so 2024, better 26 goals from 17 games. Then 45 last year.
Yeah.
And he's got 7 from 5. I think he is the most improved player in the competition.
I got 2. Maybe I got 3. Naz?
Yeah.
But again, like he's kind of drafted, so he's still like a young player, and then he's kind of found his ceiling or whatever. He's one. Bailey Smith.
Yeah.
So if you think about where Bailey was.
He's pick 6 as well, so he's kind of fulfilling his potential.
Ed Richards.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a
bad
one.
He shot the lights out, Ed Richards. I haven't got one.
I still think it's Ben Long.
Yep. Okay. That's a fun conversation.
Oh, I think it's relative to where they started, isn't it?
Yep.
So like, I think we always, I mean, Ed Richards maybe not so, but Naz and Bailey Smith were like are pretty highly touted players.
Yeah. Lids wanted to lead with this, but I'll just put it on as a little footnote here in this conversation about Hawthorn and Port. The Zach Butters appeal will be on Monday night. So Monday night at 5 p.m.
Tune in, everyone.
You'll be watching, Lids.
Oh, yeah.
You've had enough of this conversation.
I'm not playing basketball Monday just so I can stay home and find out the verdict.
You've had enough of this conversation.
Mate.
You get enough tribunal hearings at your own social basketball.
Yeah, that is true.
Jeez. Yeah. You were rubbed out at social basketball.
I was.
3 weeks.
Yeah, unfairly.
Did you go along and watch the team when you were suspended?
I wasn't allowed to. I had to sit on the other side of the court. You weren't even allowed to sit on the same side as your team. So I couldn't even score for it.
Who gets suspended for 3 weeks in social basketball?
Mate, I tell you what, some bloke got done for 110 weeks.
What?
There's a dishonour board up there.
Did you appeal your 3 week sanction?
Oh, I couldn't. Oh, but I gave a few parting shots. I tell you what, if I make Zach Butters like a choir boy on the way out, I wasn't happy.
We'll talk more about Butters on other podcasts later in the week and everything.
When I'm not here.
But Lids is not having any of it. So more on that to come, I'm sure, on AFL Saturday with Mick Malthouse and Luke Ball from...
Mick will love it.
Saturday. You'll find it here, of course, in ABC AFL Daily. Now, Adelaide and St Kilda. This is the Saturday nighter. Jack Higgins got engaged
in
Adelaide during the week. It was a year after he basically said he doesn't really like Adelaide and would rather sit in the room and play Call of Duty. So my question for you, Lids, is a pretty simple one here.
Mm.
Which city or slash interstate road trip did you enjoy the most? So Jack feels like he's gone from his worst to all of a sudden his best. He's even been engaged in the city. Was there one time where, or ground or place, that city you visited and you thought, that's the best place we go?
I've never really thought about it.
did you read the rundown today, Lids?
No, I didn't. I missed it. I used to just judge it off where I played well, you know, or where I thought I played well. And I used to love going to Brisbane because of that. The weather was always nice. Mm. I've always felt like the ball travelled further up there for some reason. Mm. And I enjoyed going to Sydney again, same thing. The weather was nice. But though some of the times when we went there, we were coming up against a pretty red-hot Sydney side and they touch us up. But then we beat up on the Giants when we got there as well. So, albeit it's a bit different by staying in the city versus staying out at Sydney Olympic Park. So... Yeah, if I was going to choose one, I'd probably say Brisbane.
Were you the type of guy that travelled with your pillow on?
Never.
I've long ridiculed people about this, and I because I think it makes you look a little infantile. But apparently, I read How We Sleep or Why We Sleep or a book about sleep, and they say that you sleep 30% better with your own pillow.
Wow!
So your body recognises that it's your pillow, and it is actually significant to your quality of sleep.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, I've never ever taken a pillow on any trip.
Thoughts with Jordan Dawson after that truly tragic story after the passing of his brother during the week. So obviously he won't be playing for the Crows on Saturday. North Melbourne and Richmond, is it time for the Tigers to put up?
It is. It's time for them to last longer into a game, I think. At this point in time, they, you know, a couple of weeks ago they were going okay against the Suns, I reckon it was, and ended up getting bounced by 10 goals and other games where they look likely but just aren't able to hold on. And I get it, that's a young side, and to come in with a half a sniff, I think, against the Roos, but to rest Jacob Hopper, who's a senior midfielder, that doesn't make it any easier. But they're just getting crueled by injury.
It's an unusual move, isn't it?
I think so, but... Yeah, they'll have to play incredibly well to beat the Roos. And if the Roos roll over on this one, well, jeepers.
He's clearly frustrated, isn't he, Uzo?
Oh, yeah, you can see it. When the camera pans back to the box, it's just like, my God, we do not train that sort of stuff, and we're doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's
even last week when you did the game, Ben, and he criticised their stoppage stuff and their work around the midfield, and you think... That's not where the kids are. Like, the guys around the ball are their senior guys, and it's interesting to see that the team sheet land the way it does. That, he's unhappy, Adam Uzo, with what he's seen through the start of the season. The other thing is, I feel like this sets their rebuild, but we spoke about it on Monday, that the kids aren't there. So it's not even like they've got five or six games into all their top picks at this stage. There's only two or three of them playing. Melbourne-Brisbane.
Yeah, does Lachie Neale have the best resume in the game amongst current players' lids?
Two-time premiership captain, four-time All-Australian.
Yep.
He's also been a Lee Matthews trophy winner. He's been voted by the coaches the best player in the game.
Yeah.
Four-time All-Australian, six-time club best and fairest.
Two Brownlows.
Five times.
Pretty impressive.
A best of field in a local derby.
Yeah.
Q clash, whatever you wish to call it. I don't think there is a resume better than it right now.
The only one that I think I'd lose the argument, but I would have an argument with you about, is maybe Max gone.
Yeah. Premiership captain, eight-time All-Australian.
But there's never been a nine-timer. And he has a chance to do that. And he plays a position that there's only one of them in every other team.
Yeah.
Whereas the All-Australian team, you could argue, they disproportionately...
They give six to eight of them. Yeah.
And I think the All-Australian team is... I'm not just saying this, Liz, because you're here. The All-Australian team should be an honour I think we look at higher in the game. Like, at the end of the year, if you're in the best team that we can assemble... That's about like the ultimate praise you can get, considering, you know, that the Ruckman can't win the Brownlow or whatever.
I totally agree.
So if Max has won it eight times in his position.
Yeah, and so that means you're in the best 23 players in that year, which used to be 22.
Mm. The other one is too, I know he's come off a little bit in recent years, but Patrick Dangerfield.
Yeah.
Like Danger's won everything. And Danger, I think, while he went through a period when guys like Tom Mitchell came along and Nat Fyfe and all these other dudes, he was like, if he wasn't the best player in the game, he was in the top three for what felt like a decade.
When he first went to the Cats, he that first year that he had there was just like, oh my gosh, this guy's just going to strap this whole side on his back, and away he went. Yeah, you make great points there. Does that mean you become a victim of playing for too long? And if that's where you start to forget about, like, Nat Fyfe. I feel like we've started to forget about how good Nat Fyfe was. Paddy Dangerfield, I mean, Pendles is still playing at a pretty high level, which is great. But he hasn't had the ins and outs like Paddy has, you know. And Nat Fyfe had the ins and outs where...
But you could argue, how many games Paddy played this year? Two? Or not even? Whatever he's done.
Yeah.
A couple of games.
Back this week.
But two games before that, he probably played the best game of his career in that prelim.
Yeah.
Like, that was a proper, like...
And he was banged up hard in the ground.
Oh, I think the proper question legacy is game. As simple as this, though. Would you rather have the accolades of Lachie Neale or Max Gawn? Which way would you go, Lids? Oh. Probably Lachie, isn't it?
Two Brownlows, two-time premiership captain.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
The last of our questions, the West Coast Eagles and Fremantle Dockers in the Western Derby, as it's called out west. This is more a question for us as native Sandgropers. Favourite derby memories, Corb?
Oh, not for me. I don't reckon I've ever watched one of these start to finish.
The first one, Freo won in the wet, and Brad Weirer, who I ran into in the lounge the other day coming back from Adelaide.
Yes,
Did the aeroplane, which was pretty cool. The iconic celebration in the driving rain. Mods kicked the goal and banged the deck. That was pretty cool. The other one's Daniel Kerr's running goal, which was goal of the year that particular year. That was a proper build-up to a derby too. Both teams were red hot at the time on a Saturday night, proper stop the city kind of stuff. Mention it. It's got to mention it every time we talk about derbies. The demo derby.
Yeah, I was about to say the demo derby is the obvious one. I like Judd's controversial medal. Remember that?
Yes.
When he won the Ross Glendinning medal, as it was at the time, got broadly booed. Said, popular winner then.
Yeah.
But
what about the year Michael Gardner won the medal and Ashley Sampey won the voting and Ross Glendinning presented it and said, it's my medal. I thought Michael Gardner was the best on ground. And so he went up there and read out the votes, read out the winner and said, Michael Gardner's the winner. They checked the votes and Sampey had actually polled the most. But he just decided, it's my name. My medal. I'm going to give it to Mickey Gardner.
Just a couple of things. So it's the oldest of the two-team town rivalries. Yep. We haven't had a derby final yet. So, incredibly, we were very close to a Derby Grand Final in 06. Freo lost the prelim. We've had four Sydney derbies in finals. One showdown final back in 05. The Crows won that by 83 points. Mm. And the Q Clash final last year, which the Lions won. But still never that elusive Derby final.
Do you know what throws me as well? It's the 62nd Western Derby, and there's always two a year. Mm. So I think, how's there an odd number if there wasn't a final? But obviously the COVID year, where we only played everyone once, meant there was only one Western Derby that year, so that's why it's Derby number 62.
You love numbers, don't you?
Mason Cox could make his debut in a Western Derby. He's a big game player, so who knows if...
good in that prelim?
He did. I think he debuted on Anzac Day, didn't he? In his AFL debut and kicked a goal. Might have kicked the first goal of the game. All right, that's us just about out of here before we go.
Oh, the favourite time of the week.
It's time for our Superdog selections. You get 5 points for a cover. You get 5 points plus the spread for an outright win. You get 1 point for a push. There'll be none of those given where we've got these half margins thrown in. So last week, Rama was here. He picked North Melbourne in your absence against the Brisbane Lions. Yep. You were catching 34.5. Lost by 26. Still get the cover play.
Got the cover.
5 points for Lids. Takes him to 10 on the leaderboard. I'm still on 5 after one of the most horrific bad beats you're ever likely to see. So I picked the West Coast Eagles against Geelong. I was getting 45.5 points. What do you reckon they lost by? I was getting 45.5.
44?
No, the other way. 46.
Oh, 46.
But...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
But Elijah Hewitt had a set shot after the final siren. If he'd kicked the goal, they would have got the cover play. But he missed, and they missed by one.
And so what's your score?
So I got 0, so I'm on 5. And Ben got the cover play on the Pies. So 12.5 he was getting on Collingwood against Fremantle. They lost by 6. 5 points. Takes Ben to 52. So Ben's on 52. Lid's on 10.
I need a big win here.
And I'm on 5. All right, here's the games. Bulldogs, you get 11.5 points against Geelong. GWS are getting 24.5 points against Sydney. Essendon with a 43.5 point head start against Gold Coast. Port Adelaide are catching 40.5 against the Hawks. St Kilda get 15.5 points against the Crows. Richmond with a 24.5 point head start against North Melbourne. Melbourne get a 20.5 point head start against the Brisbane Lions. And the West Coast Eagles, 43.5 points against Fremantle in the Derby.
What was the Essendon one, did you say? How many points?
43.5.
I'll take that one.
All right, putting Lids down for the Bombers.
I'll take St Kilda, 15.5.
That's actually a pretty good one, given the list of outs for the Crows. I don't mind that. I don't like it.
Tick, 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 tick.
I'll take the Bulldogs with 11.5 points against the Cats. They've actually won 2 of their last 3 down there, which is about as good a record as there is. All right. I'm glad people waited for that.
Big
pause just to build the suspense before the final Superdog selection. Lids, I know you're keen to hang around, but we're done. So I'll chat to you next week.
Pleasure, boys. Look forward to it.
Have a good weekend, bunch.
See you, Lids. See you, cool.
All right. That's us down on ABC AFL Daily. Don't forget, 5 drops each week, the home of your footy conversation right here on ABC AFL Daily.